Morning. Today's daf in Zvachim is Sadi Gimel. We are on Sadi Beis Amud Beis. We started the new parak of the Masechta yesterday. We're now in the 11th parak of Zvachim. And we are discussing Allah and the Torah that is brought down in Parsha Sav. Pass me the chumash for just a moment. I didn't do this yesterday. It's really worthwhile. It helps us get our bearings in terms of the topic of this parak. The halach of kibbutz, when it comes to the blood of a karmen chatas, so the Torah introduces us to a chiddush, a novel ruling as it relates to the blood, and that is, you got to wash it out, wash the blood out of your clothing. I say your clothing, I mean the Kohen's clothing, of course. The Torah says as follows: at the end of Perek Vav in Parshat Tzav in the Torah. So the Torah goes once again over some of the more details regarding the Karbanos. The Torah introduced the Karbanos in Parshas Vayikra. And in Parshat Tzav, so the Torah reintroduces the Karbanos, but with slightly more detail, and it's a little more procedure-oriented. So these are going to be the laws regarding Karban Chatas. So first of all, where you shecht it's in the north, like because it falls under the category of Kodesh Kadashim. HaKohen HaMechate Osa Yochalenu. The Kohen who does the sprinkling, so he's going to eat it. B'makom Kadosh Teachel B'chatzer HaMoed. And where is it going to be consumed? In the Azara. Okay? Halach is we're all familiar with. Kol Asher Yigabiv Sara Yigdash
V'Asher Yigdash. You're concerned about the blood or the clothes?
Well, we didn't get to it yet. Kol Asher Yigabiv Sara Yigdash. And anyone who touches the meat is going to have the same Kedusha. Touching over here, meaning that when an infusion of the karben chatas goes into any other food, it's going to now take on the status of the karben chatas, where it's going to dictate now where it can be eaten and when it can be eaten. It can only be eaten in the Azara and only by Zichrei Kahuna. V'asher yizem medama ala begen. And here we go. And the Torah says, now, if any of the blood is sprinkled on the clothing, asher yizem aleha techabes b'makom kadosh. So the Torah says that it must be laundered b'makom kadosh, in the holy place, meaning that you have to do the laundry, and oddly enough, you have to do it in the Azara. And then the Torah says, and if you cook it in an earthenware pot, and the men mean to say, if you cook the meat of the chatas in an earthenware pot, you have to break the earthenware pot. Now, if it's cooked in a copper pot, so then you have to rinse out the pot. Really, it's more than rinse it out. In other words, you have to kosher it. That's a halacha which we're going to get to a little bit later on. And finally, kol zachar b'kohanim yochal asar kodesh kadashim hi. Male kohanim are eating it. V'chol chatas asher yivah midam el olamot l'chaper b'kosh lo se'achal b'esh tisarif. And finally, the last halach of this parsha regarding the karben chatas, if any of the blood of a karben chatas, obviously the outer karben chatas, if any of the blood of an outer karben chatas is brought into the olamot, meaning brought into the base of mikdash, the carbon cannot be eaten. It needs to be burnt, meaning that's a disqualification regarding the carbon. So the Torah introduces us to this idea that if any of the blood gets sprinkled on the clothing, the blood has to be laundered out of the clothing. Thank you. Blood has to be laundered out of the clothing. This halacha is not given any reason why in the Torah. Torah does not connect it to any other halacha. Does not give us any explanation. And as I mentioned yesterday, neither does the Gemara. Gemara just simply is treating this halacha like any other halacha, with giving us the parameters and giving us the rules in terms of when this is true, when this is not true. We're going to be darshaning these psukim a number of times throughout this perek. But in terms of a deeper understanding of why it is that there's this requirement to launder it, so the Torah doesn't say, the Gemara doesn't say as well. What did we learn yesterday in the Mishnah?
What do you do with the washing? Well,
right.
It under
right. Unclear. Unclear. It's a fair question. I don't know. Okay. Okay. I certainly don't have an opinion, and I don't know. The Mishnah yesterday's opening Mishnah of the 11th parak. Yesterday, that if any of the blood goes on the baggage, so it requires kibbutz. And even though the Torah is talking about the chatos and echalos, the chatos which are consumed, otherwise known as the outer chatos, but the same halacha would be true with the regarding the inner chatos. If inner chatos blood got sprinkled on the clothing, so that clothing also needs to be laundered as well. What if it's chatos of a karben psula? So that does not need to be laundered. And our Mishnah says very clearly, and I don't care, says the Mishnah, whether or not the psul happened before the shechting, or even if the psul happened after you shechted it. If the psul happened after you shechted it, in other words, you shechted the chatas correctly, you collected the blood correctly, and then afterwards, now, from the time that it got into the kli sharis until, before you sprinkled it, it becomes pasul. The Mishnah gives an example. I'll give one example of the Mishnah yesterday. Lina. Let's say the blood was not sprinkled, just sitting in the bowl, and then sunset occurs. So even then, the blood of such a carbon that goes on the clothing does not require laundering. This is what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. In the Gemara yesterday, we learned together that this halacha does not apply to chatas ha'of. Blood of the chatas bird that goes on the clothing, it does not have a requiring of laundering. How do we know that? So that was the Gemara yesterday, which had, we had a ribui, we had a miyud, we had an amplification, we had a limitation in the Torah. Where does the ribui apply to? Where does the miyud apply to? What is the Torah principle even talking about? Okay, that was all part of yesterday's discussion. But the conclusion, very straightforward, is that the blood of chatas chitzona, chatas pinimio do require kibbutz. Blood of chatas ha'of do not require kibbutz. That takes us to where we are right now. We are on Sadi Beis Amud Beis. We're halfway down the Amud by Rabbi Abin. So we're going to have a number of questions that we're going to be discussing today in the first half of today's daf. And so we start off with the following. Chatas of Sheikhnis Midama B'Tzavra B'Fnimau. So let's say I have the Chatas bird, where the blood is taken into the Heichal. What now becomes the status of such blood? Now, this is not a kibbutz question, and it's a little bit strange that right now we're dealing with a non-kibbutz question, but still, the Gemara wants to know right now, and perhaps what this is going to do is set us up for the next question, which is kibbutz related. But here comes the question now. Now, we know with the chatas bird, so it has a number of things that differentiate it between an animal, and one of them is that there's no klisharis. There's no kabbalah sadam. You don't receive the blood. As opposed to an animal where you shecht, so after shechita, the next avod is kabbalas adam. The blood is going to be gushing out of the neck of the animal. The kohen's going to be there with a bowl, collecting, catching the blood coming out of the neck of the animal. That's kabbalas adam. We've said over time and again, the kabbalas adam has to be done by a kohen. The shechita doesn't have to be done by a kohen, but the kabbalas adam does. And now, if the blood, after being collected into a kli sharis of a chatas, were to be marched into the heichal, into the actual building, so now the blood becomes disqualified, and the carbon chatzis is to be discarded. Good. This is what we all knew. The Gemara's question is as follows. What about the blood of a chatzis bird? Now, the blood of a chatzis bird does not have kabbalas adam. There's no receiving of the blood. What the Kohen is doing with the chatzis bird is he's shechting it, and then immediately after shechting, and when I say shechting, to be clear, it's malika. He takes his thumbnail and presses it into the back of the neck of the bird. He's standing right next to the mizbech. And then as the blood is coming out, he is spraying it onto the mizbech. Hazaa, directly onto the mizbech. There is no kli sharis. Now that we know that there's no kli sharis as it relates to the chatas bird, so basically now is as follows. The question of the Gemara is, let's say the chatas bird immediately after Malika was then taken into the heichal. Well, does that blood now become disqualified, yes or no? And what the presumption of the question is that blood only becomes disqualified if taken into the heichal while in a kli sharis. That's an assumption the Gemara is making. So you think to yourself, okay, if that's true, so then there shouldn't be a problem. Meaning the blood's not in a kli sharis, the blood is in the neck of the animal. And what the Gemara now is entertaining is the following, conceptually. The neck of the animal of the bird, does that basically serve now as a substitute for a kli sharis? Meaning, is it the fact that the bird does not have this procedure of kli sharis? Do we just simply say, A, we dispense with the kli sharis altogether? There simply is no kli sharis as relates to a bird. Or perhaps B, that really what the neck of the bird is that it serves as the kli sharis. And when the kohen is there with the bird, sprinkling it on the mizbech, what effectively he's doing is he's sprinkling it from an organic kli sharis, otherwise known as the neck of the bird. Well, these two different ways to look at the neck of the bird are now going to become critical in this particular question. When you bring the blood of the bird that was just nimlocked, whose neck was just severed, and you bring it into the heichal, and obviously, now I understand the blood's going to be shooting out. I understand all this is a really not as controlled scenario as I'm describing it. but just from a conceptual standpoint, do we say that now that the blood that's brought into the Heichal is not in a Kli Sharis, meaning it's just in the neck of the bird, and therefore it's fine, or no? Do we view the neck of the bird now as the Kli Sharis, and therefore the blood becomes disqualified, otherwise known as the bird becomes disqualified?
Isn't there a process? Just wait, give me a second.
By Rabbi Abin. Chazasov sheichnis dama b'tzavra b'fnei ma'u. Tzavra ke Kli Sharis, dami. Do we say that the neck is like a Kli Sharis? Mifso. Odilma ke tzavra behemas. Or no? Do we view the neck of the bird like the neck of an animal, and therefore it's considered bivsara? It's considered now still in the meat of the animal, and as a result of that, it's not going to be disqualified. Okay, so this is the question we have now on the table. How do we view the neck of the bird? Tashma. So the Gemara over here quotes a Braisa, and this Braisa gives a following scenario. Let's say right after the Kohen did Malika with the bird, so he lost his handle on the bird, literally, lost his handle on it, and the bird fell out of his hand and started flopping. And the flop of the bird, right, it bounced uncontrollably, and it bounced right into the Heichal. So, v'chazra k'shera. And if the Kohen now were just simply, I'm sorry, v'chazra, and the bird actually then flops back out again. When Rashi points out over here, this detail is not absolutely necessary, meaning the Kohen could just simply go in, pick it up, and take it out again. Rashi's insistent over here that this particular detail is not necessary to make the point. In any event, so the Braisa talks now where bird fell out of the Kohen's hand and flops into the Heichal and comes back out again, and you're fine. And why are you fine? Because no one brought it into the Heichal. This happened on its own. It's only simply because the bird naturally just started flopping around. And the diuk the Gemara now wants to make is as follows. Ha hichnisa psula. Now, the Gemara says, now I'm reading the Braisa. Now, if I read it critically, what it sounds like is only because this was a natural event, an organic event, no one brought the bird in, then and only then the bird is still kosher. But what the implication would be is that if somebody actually walked the bird in after Malika, so then it would be pusul. And that now we go back to our original question. Well, how am I viewing the neck of the bird? If our conclusion is correct that it's pasul, so then clearly the neck of the bird is viewed as a Kli Sharis. Ulatamech, the Gemara says, Gabi Kachi Kadash and Diktani. The Gemara says, okay, I understand how you read the Braisa, and I understand the diuk that you made the Braisa, the inference, but the Gemara says, but I don't think you're right. Why? Because why don't we all read together in the Braisa? Pirchas of Yatzal Adaram, let's say, it flopped around, and it went to the south. Now, here, when we're talking about going to the south, we're talking about an animal, right? By a bird, there's no requirement of shechting in the north, right? The bird could be shechted and nimlocked in any location. If an animal, let's say, was shechted, and it goes to the south, v'chazra, and then it returns, k'shera, ha'hutziya psula, which would seem to indicate that if the Kohen were then to, after shechting the carbon, march it to the south and march it back up to the north again of the Azara, so then would be possible. But Ella, hayatzalechus, I'm sorry, Ella. Now, what the Gemara is pointing out at this point in time, with a little bit of inflection, and with Rashi's help, the Gemara is saying, and that's ridiculous. Meaning, and that's not so. Meaning, if after you shechted an animal in the north, an animal that needs to be shechted in the north, right? Any of the Kachi Kadoshim. If after you shechted the animal in the north, you then move it south of the Mason-Dixon line, and then you move it back north again, even if you did that, it's not going to disqualify the carbon, meaning you shechted in the north. You did what you were supposed to do. So the Gemara says, Elahai yatzal chutz itzterichlei. You know what the Braisa was trying to do over there? In the example of bird going into the Heichal, in the example of animal going from the north down to the south, back to the north again, it sets us up all for the next point. So itzterichlei, hachanami yatzal chutz itzterichlei. Ella, hayatzal chutz etzterichlei. Hachanam yatzal chutz etzterichlei. So the Gemara says the only thing that the Braisa was there to make the point, the contrasting point of the Braisa, was not, well, if it goes in by itself versus if I bring it in. That's not the contrasting point. The contrasting point of the Braisa is if the bird is brought into the Heichal versus the bird being taken out of the Azara altogether. And those are the two contrasting points. If the bird is brought into the Heichal, so after it was nimlocked, whether it happened on its own, whether I did it myself, so the bird's going to be fine. If the bird's taken out of the Azara, out of the entirety of the Azara, after Malika's done, well, that's Yotzei, and therefore it's going to be disqualified. That's the only point the Brice is making. So the Gemara says, so our initial diuk is not a good diuk.
And it goes on its own itself
too. Yeah, in other words, if it goes, and going outside, right, doesn't matter how it went outside. Absolutely correct. Okay. By Rabbi Abin. Okay, so where do we stand right now? Question on the table. How do we view the neck of the bird? Is it considered klisharis? Is it not considered klisharis? Open-ended question. Next. By Rabbi Abin. Nishbach al ritzba v'asba mahu. Okay. Let's say now, after doing malika with the bird, blood went on the floor and then someone collected it. Now, again, it really boils down to the same question that we asked previously. Once again, here's what we know. We know that the neck of the bird is, there's no klisharis. Sorry, let's start this again. We know that there's no klisharis as it relates to a bird. The malika is done with the bird, and then immediately the blood is then sprinkled on the mizbeach. Right, well, let's focus right now on the chatas ov, the chatas bird. The blood is immediately then sprinkled on the mizbeach. Okay, and here's also what we know when it comes to an animal. We know that when it comes to an animal, if you shecht a karban, and the blood goes from the neck of the animal onto the floor, it's pasul. We also know that if the blood went from the neck to a klisharis, and then after being collected into a klisharis falls onto the floor, it's kasher. Right? We learned that earlier in the Masechta, back in the second parak. So, for an animal, the halacha is very clear. If it doesn't go into a klisharis, goes on the floor, pasul. If it goes into a klisharis and spills on the floor, so you pick it up again and you're fine. And so now, we get to repeat the same question regarding the bird. The bird, there is no klisharis. And is now the neck of the bird either, so again, the two ways to look at it are either, there just simply is no klisharis. In other words, the entire klisharis, Kabbalah Saddam, is bypassed altogether. Or no. Do we say that the klisharis procedure is there, it's just incorporated in the neck of the bird? Or otherwise stated, the neck of the bird now, after Malika, is viewed as the klisharis, and therefore, I did do Kabbalah Saddam, just there wasn't anything to do. It just happens in of itself. But now, obviously, it's going to be important in terms of establishing the answer to this question. If the neck of the bird is not considered like a klisharis, so what just happened with the blood that spilled on the floor? Unrecoverable. If the neck of the bird is considered klisharis, and then the blood spills on the floor, recoverable. So the Gemara spells out exactly both sides of this question. Nishbach l'ritzba v'asva mahu. Atzuchu d'la atzuchu rachman klisharis. V'ilkach osvo v'kasher. Is it that the Torah doesn't require klisharis because we do have a klisharis here? It's otherwise known as the neck of the bird. So therefore, if the blood falls on the floor, I can just pick it up and it's recoverable. Or no, do we say it differently? Do we say that a klisharis is disqualified regarding a bird? In other words, there is no institution of klisharis as it relates to a bird. And therefore, that means that the blood went straight from the bird onto the floor with no klisharis, and therefore it's unrecoverable. Amarava Toshma. So then once again, it's basically the same question, and the Gemara now is going to try to bring the following proof. Yachli Edem Chatzosov Taun Kibus Tamalamra Zos. Okay, let's go back to what we learned in yesterday's daf. Blood of a bird that gets onto the clothing of a kohen does not require kibus. Good. We learned that yesterday. We learned it because of a miut, because the Torah gave a limitation, the word zos, something is cut out from this halacha, blood of a chatas bird. That's what we learned yesterday. Now, Isa gedacha mifsa pasul be'rachmana. Gemara says, let's imagine altogether for a moment that there's no miut. And that means to say that the blood of the bird that went onto the clothing is going to require kibbutz. Okay? Now, that's not the conclusion. But we're not looking at conclusions right now, we're looking at proofs. So let's just all imagine together that the halacha is that the blood of a bird does require kibbutz. Good? And now, typically, the ha'ifso la ba'avir kli. So the Gemara says, so now, let us argue the following. When the blood goes into the kli, now when we use the word kli over here, kli is a general term. Kli can actually mean a klisharis, like a bowl. Kli could also be referring to the begadim of the kohen. In this context, it's a reference to the begadim of the kohen. And so, over here, we have a general rule. We're going to be discussing it a number of times in the course of today's daf, and that is of your kli, the airspace of a kli. Now, here, if we're talking about the clothing, I know it's a little bit hard to conceptualize what that means, the airspace of a kli. But in this context, however, let's just say it. In other words, there's something called the avir kli, the airspace of the kli, And so that means that when the blood gets into the airspace of the clothing, now airspace over here, I don't know if we mean airspace that goes directly above it, airspace directly in front of it. Not perfectly clear to me, but that doesn't matter. In other words, there's this idea of airspace of the kli. So if the blood were to go into the airspace of the kli, it will become disqualified. Why exactly would it become disqualified if it goes into the airspace of the kli? Rashi over here writes as follows. Rashi writes, typically, the lo by kibus. Rashi is about 8 lines from the bottom of the amud. Typically, the lo by kibus, belav miyuta de zos. Without the miyuta of zos, I would have said there's no requirement of laundering. Da if sole dam, mechimata la avira beged. Once it gets to the airspace of the beged, there would be no longer any requirement of kibus as the blood now becomes disqualified. V'anan roi la hazabi inan va'aver kli ke kli dami. The airspace of the kli is going to be viewed like the kli, and here's what we all know. We're going to be seeing this a number of times in the course of today's daf, and again, we learned it yesterday. The only blood that requires kibbutz is blood that you can sprinkle on the mizbeach. If I can no longer sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, there is no requirement of kibbutz. So the Gemara's question basically goes as follows. If the bird blood was not disqualified from the miut of zos, I still would have said that there is no requirement to launder the blood that goes on the clothing because it becomes disqualified by just simply entering the airspace of the clothing. And so therefore, it would have been excluded already even without the pasuk of Zos. Therefore, and then I understand this is a bit of a complicated argument. Therefore, it must be that the way we must look at the bird is that the neck really serves as a kli sharis, and because the neck serves as a kli sharis, so therefore when the blood goes from the neck of the bird onto the clothing, it's recoverable blood, which could then in turn be used to sprinkle on the mizbeach. This all is to make the point. I'm Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua, Bemad Bikli B'Tzavra. So the Gemara says, well, not necessarily. Meaning, what we could do is we could say that everything we said is absolutely true. The airspace of a kli is considered a kli. When the blood of the bird goes into the airspace, it becomes disqualified. If it were to become disqualified, even before touching the clothing, it therefore would not require kibus, because again, it is not sprinklable blood. It's blood that's not roi lehaza. We could have said all this. What would be the case then where there would be a requirement of kibus? The case would be where, let's say, I take a rag or clothing and I actually press it against the neck of the bird so it does not become disqualified through coming into contact with the airspace. Okay. So all that stated, once again, question on the table, neck of the bird is considered cliché, yes or no? And once again, the Gemara ends it up as, it leaves it as an open-ended question.
Rabbi Shimon?
Yes.
Didn't we learn earlier about blood spilling on the Azara that was only with animals? We didn't discuss birds? Because if we knew the answer about the bird, then we didn't have the answer.
Again, when it comes to the blood of an animal, the halacha is very clear. Before going into a kli sharis, it spills directly on the floor, unrecoverable. Goes into a kli sharis and then spills on the floor, recoverable. The complication regarding the bird is that there is no kli sharis requirement by a bird. It does not, you
I
do not...
discuss about blood spilling on the floor.
No. In other words, no. And right. That's an excellent observation. Meaning this topic has not been brought up before, and so therefore it leaves the question now as an open-ended question, simply because we don't know how to properly look at the neck of the bird after Malika is done. Is it that it's viewed as a kli sharis, or just simply we dispense with the kli sharis altogether? Bamine Levi. Okay. Question on the table now goes like this. Nitas mi beged la beged mahu. Okay. Now, let's say that the blood were to jump from one garment to another garment. We're no longer talking about birds right now. We're talking about an animal. And what happened was is that the blood of the chatas animal sprinkled onto one Kohen's clothing and then ricocheted from his clothing onto somebody else's clothing. Okay? Two people got stained with one spill. I've seen it happen in my house more than once. So the nitas mi bege la bege mao. So mi bege kama itchele lekibus odim alo. So, question is as follows. Once again, the starting premise for all of these discussions. This requirement in the Torah of laundering blood from a garment is only for blood that is roi lahaza. It has to be fit for sprinkling. So again, regarding the bird, it was even more complicated because we don't know whether or not the neck of the bird is considered kli sharis, yes or no. Okay, but we do know, however, that the blood of an animal goes into a kli sharis. That part we know. So now let's say that the blood was collected from the animal into a kli sharis. That's great. And as the kohen now is walking towards the mizbeach, he trips, and the blood now shoots out from the cup, hits one kohen's garment, and then ricochets from his garment and hits another kohen's garment. Okay, and so now, question on the table is as follows. So the Gemara says, look, I certainly know that the blood that went on the first garment is recoverable blood, and again, we know it came from a kli sharis, so that blood was fit to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. Consequently, that blood now is going to be ra'i lahazah. Therefore, the requirement of kibbutz kicks in. However, the blood that goes now and ricochets from that garment now to a second garment, do I say now that because there is a requirement of kibbutz on that first garment, so vis-a-vis now the second garment, it is viewed now as disqualified blood, therefore with no requirement, no special requirement of hazah? Okay? We have the question on the table. Amrle zu she'ela. Huh? No, the kibbutz. So, zu she'ela. Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is that those two questions go hand in hand. Meaning, if I can't do hazah with it, so then there is no requirement of kibbutz. So, amrle zu she'ela. So he says to him, that's a really good question. And again, right, properly intoning the Gemara when reading it. So Rashi says, this is not sarcastic. He meant it as, it's a good question. It's a really good question. Zu she'ela. Tan kibbutz miman nafshach. I think there's a kibbutz requirement. Because iosva v'kasher, ha'kasher. Because let's take two things into consideration. If let's say we were to collect the blood and I could sprinkle that blood, so therefore it's kasher. So obviously now we're talking about blood which is ra'ui lahazah, it's appropriate to sprinkle, and therefore it would be fine. And vi'i osfa upaso. So the Gemara says, and even if you were to tell me that if I collected the blood off the second garment, if I collected the blood off the first garment, if you're telling me that I can't use that to sprinkle, I would still say that the blood that fell on the second garment would require hazah. Why would I say that? Now, remember, who's fielding this question? Levi. Levi's fielding this question. So he says, I would still say that it requires a kibbutz. Why? Because meaning Levi saying this, Karebi Kiva Svirle, I hold like Rabbi Akiva. Dama Haisal Shasakosha Venifsala Dama Tom Kivas. Who's of the opinion that as long as there was a Shasa Kosher, as long as it had a time of eligibility, and then only after the time of eligibility becomes disqualified, there's still a kibbutz requirement. Now, if you go back to yesterday's daf, you'll think to yourself, well, that's not what we learned yesterday. You're right. It's not. It's not what we learned yesterday. We learned yesterday that our Mishnah could not have been any clearer that if the blood is disqualified, doesn't matter whether it did or did not have a moment of eligibility, our Mishnah says that once the blood is disqualified, it no longer has a kibbutz requirement. That was the Mishnah we learned yesterday. What we're going to learn later today is that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with the Tana of our Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that, no, blood of chatas, if it never had a moment of eligibility, meaning if something went wrong at the time of shechita, so that the blood, when introduced into the kli sharis, was not eligible, so that blood does not require kibbutz. However, Rabbi Akiva says that if, let's say, the shechita was done correctly, the kabbalas adam was done correctly, and only after it was received in the cup, then it becomes disqualified, Rabbi Akiva says if that blood falls on the garment, that does require kibbutz. Levi therefore says, I subscribe to Rabbi Kiva's viewpoint. I say that if it had a shas kosher, it would require kibbutz. Even if you want to tell me that the blood that I scrape off of the first garment is ineligible to be offered onto the mizbech, sprinkled on the mizbech, but it did historically have a shas kosher, it was eligible at a time, I subscribe to Rabbi Kiva. So if you're asking me, it doesn't matter whether the blood is or isn't eligible when taken off the first garment. Either way, I would say that it requires kibbutz. Okay. The Amar Haisal Shasakosha Nisla Damatan Kibbutz. Okay, and our next question, which is going to be, of all the questions, interestingly enough, we've asked a number of questions, and most of them were left unresolved. This is by far and away going to be a difficult question to respond to answer. Ba'amine Rami Barchama Mirav Chista. Nitas al Beged Tame Mahu. Let's say the blood was spilled onto a garment, And the garment under question was a tameh garment, meaning the kohen was wearing it was tameh, the beged is tameh. And now, as the blood is hitting the garment, so the blood now becomes tameh as well. Fine. And now the question on the table is, does this garment require kibbutz, yes or no? Now again, let's all review the information that we already know. But let's review. According to the Tanna of our Mishnah, blood is only going to require kibbutz when the blood is ra'u la'hazah, it's fit for hazah. So over here, is the blood fit for hazah? Well, currently in the current state that it's in right now, no, it's not fit for hazah. So hold that thought for just a moment. We're coming back to it. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, does it have to be fit for hazah?
No.
At a moment's time, yes, but currently no. According to Rabbi Akiva, as long as it had a shas, a kosher, as long as it had a moment of eligibility, when I received it in the Kli Sharis, it was eligible. So even if afterwards something disqualifies the blood, that blood still requires kibbutz. That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So over here, as we ask this question, blood sprinkling on clothing which is tameh, which obviously means the blood's going to become tameh. So if you were Rabbi Akiva, the question doesn't even get off the ground. It's a no-brainer. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. So, Amar Ravuna Breda of Yeshua, Midikaman Baileha, Chishmamina, Aisla Shasa Kosher, Venivsla, Indamatan Kibbutz. So, if the blood had a Shasa Kosher and it becomes disqualified, so the blood doesn't require Kibbutz. Just another way to simply say, we're talking now within the framework of the Chachamim of our Mishnah, but we're not talking within the framework of Rabbi Kiva. According to Rabbi Kiva, of course that blood is going to require Kibbutz and had a Shasa Kosher. So over here, we must be asking this question within the viewpoint of the Tana of our Mishnah. And so now, here comes the question. So, Hani Mili B'Zachar Zeh, Ava B'Vas Achas Lo, Odum Alo Shna. And the Gemara says, and here's basically the question on the table. You see, the blood went into the garment. Now, if the garment were not Tameh, okay, let's think this through. If the garment wasn't Tameh, so now, would there be a requirement of kibbutz? The answer, of course, is yes. Now, if I were to extract that blood from the garment, can I sprinkle it on the mizbeach? Maybe yes, maybe no, like we discussed just a moment ago. Meaning the fact that it's now in the garment itself, and there's a requirement of kibbutz on this blood, so at this point going forward, it may be ineligible to be offered onto the sprinkled onto the mizbeach. But according to the Chachamim, from the moment that it went into the garment, it was perfectly eligible for hazah. Therefore, it requires kibbutz. But you see over here, as it's hitting the garment is tameh. As it's hitting the garment, the blood now becomes tameh. So do we say now that is the correct way to view it, is that this is a scenario of zeh achar zeh? In other words, is this a sequential event? Where the blood is hitting the garment, it first becomes tamei, then it becomes disqualified to be sprinkled onto the mizbeach, because now it is embedded in the garment, but it's sequential, or no? The correct way to do it is look at it is not as a sequential event, but rather as a concurrent event, meaning it hitting the garment, and the blood becoming disqualified now to be sprinkled on the mizbeach is happening concurrently as the blood is becoming tamei. So in other words, do we look at this sequentially or do we look at this as concurrently? And that now will make all the difference in terms of whether or not the blood requires kibbutz, yes or no. Again, if I could just reset this. According to Rabbi Akiva, not even a question on the table. It had a shasa kosher, there's going to be a kibbutz requirement. According to the Chachamim, it has to be that the blood gets into the garment being fit for sprinkling until the moment it's embedded into the garment. Then and only then is going to be requiring kibbutz. Over here, because the garment is tameh, and because the blood becomes tameh as it's hitting the garment, is it sequential? First tameh, then embedded into the garment, and therefore there'd be no kibbutz requirement? Or is it concurrent? And if it's concurrent, so then there would be a kibbutz requirement, even according to the Chachamim. Okay, I know that's a lot. It's a lot to absorb.
If it's concurrent, why would the Chachamim agree with that?
Because if it's concurrent, that means that up until the time that it got into the garment, it was fit to be sprinkled.
Mm-hmm. So the airspace was fine.
Oh, so okay, good. Oh, you're headed in the right direction. You're totally headed in the right direction. Oh, Dimaloshna. Amalei plugged the Rebbe Lezver Rabbanan Liba the Rabbo to Kamitaritz Abaye. So, in a line and a half of Gemara, the Gemara just encoded a lot of information. So he says, well, you know, it's the debate between Rebbe Lezver and the Chachamim, as explained by Rabba, but then re-explained by Abaye. Oh, sure. of course. And so all we need to do, this is laugh out loud funny, all we need to do is just introduce ourselves to the machlokes between Rebbe Lezver and the Chachamim, which has nothing to do with our topic, but as we'll see, has conceptually everything to do with our topic, and as explained by Rabba and as re-explained by Abaye. Once you know all that, so then we can reintroduce our question of an item hitting another item, becoming tummy as it makes contact, then getting embedded into the item. Is that sequential or is that concurrent? So, Ditanya Rabbi Lazar Omer Mechata Shinit Mu Matarin. So, the Mechata. So, we're now moving topics right now from the blood of a Chatas Karban to our Mechatas. Mechatas got a lot of airtime in our Mesechta, and here it comes up again. The Mechatas is solution of water and ashes of the Paraduma that is used, we just read in yesterday Sedra, that is used right after the war with Midian. So those who came into contact with dead bodies, meaning they were fighting the battle. So the soldiers, the 12,000 soldiers, so they needed the sprinkling of the Paraduma. Just read in yesterday Sedra. So the solution now of the Mayim Chaim and the Paraduma that is sprinkled, that first becomes Tamei Mitaharin. So, according to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, even though the Mechatas becomes Tamei, the solution becomes Tamei, it could still be used to provide Tahara. Now, first of all, just in of itself, an interesting point, it is eligible to becoming Tamei. Right, the mechatas can become tamei. Okay, point number one, which in of itself is interesting, and now even though it's tamei, it could still be used for tahara. How do I know that? Says Rabbi Lazar. The proof actually is pretty straightforward. Shari nida mazin aleha, a woman who's a nida. So while she's a nida, obviously she's tamei, and in addition to being a nida, she's also tamei meis. She came into contact with a dead body. She served on the chevra kedisha. And she now is, she has two tumas that are resting on her. One of her being Anita and the other one being a tumah meis. Does she first have to address one tumma in order to get rid of another tumma? So we've discussed this time and again throughout Shas. The answer is no. Meaning, you can treat each tumma independent of the other. You can resolve one while still having the other. So in other words, she can get rid of her tumah meis even while she's Anita. Now, granted, by the way, they both happen to be 7 days, Minat Torah, and so if she starts them both at the same time, they're both going to conclude at the same time. But let's say she started the Tumah Meis process even earlier, meaning she started before she was Anida. And now, as she's concluding her Tumah Meis process by being sprinkled on day 3 and day 7, so she happens to be that she's Anida. Is that a problem? So the answer is no. Now, Rashi over here writes wonderfully. How do I know the answer is no? Because it's never mentioned. Meaning, nobody, no, not the Torah, not the Mishnah, no one ever points out that, oh, you can't sprinkle the Mechatas on a woman who's a Nida. Meaning, it works. When you sprinkle the Mechatas on a woman who's a Nida, even though, in terms of her Nida status is concerned, that's obviously going to resolve itself when it resolves itself, but in terms of her becoming Tahor from Tumas Meis, it works fine. Now, if we can, let's look at the Hazan day 7, being sprinkled on the woman who's Anida. When that water makes contact with her, so it's providing purification, but at the same time, and now you start to see the question of sequential versus concurrent, but at the same time that it's making contact with her, it's also the water itself is going to become Tameh. Rabbi Lazar says, what do I see over here? What I see over here is that even though the water is Tameh, it doesn't matter. The tamei water that made contact with her is still going to be an effective way to provide for her tahara from Tumas Meis. Okay, this is all Rebbe Lazar. So already you see this already, that the way he's viewing contact of the Mechatus with the woman is that it's a sequential event. First it becomes Tamei, then it's Mitarher. There's a lot of information over here to roll out. Let's roll out the information. The Amar Rabba Rabbi Lazar B'Shitas Rabbi Kiva Rabba Amra. Now over here, now by the way, the Chachamim disagree. Not with the conclusion, but the way to view it. Meaning the Chachamim also agree that you can sprinkle the Mechatas on Nida and she will be resolved over Tumas Meis. That they totally are on board with. It's the next point which the Chachamim are going to struggle with, and that is the way to view the water being sprinkled on her. So let's take this step by step. So I'm a Rabbah. So now this is Rabbah's way of understanding the machlok between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim. Rabbi Lazar b'shitas Rabbi Kiva Rabbo Amra, that Rabbi Lazar subscribes to the opinion of his Rabbi, meaning Rabbi Kiva. The Amar ha'avaris kli al gabei makom tameh kemunach dami. That when you take a kli and you put it over the airspace of something which is tameh, it becomes tameh. Now we've used this idea earlier in Shas, most notably in Shabbos, and that is kluta kemisha huncha damya. That when something is collected in the airspace of another area, it's as viewed as if it is settling on that area, even though it's in motion, even though it's going through the airspace. But kluta kemisha huncha damya. Now we're taking that idea and we're applying it over here. Did not I omit chosatan v'sheretz betaner v'hoshi yado lechalom v'natal es ha'lagin ve'avir al pitaner Rabbi Kiva metame v'chachamim metarim. Let's say there's an oven, and in the oven there is a sheretz. So that means that anything that's resting in the oven is earthenware. So that means that the entire interior airspace of the oven is tameh, and so that means that if anything were to be resting in the oven, so then it would become tameh. Now, it happens to be that right now I'm trying to reach for the bottle of Mechatas, and it's in the windowsill, and in order for me to reach it, I have to go over the oven, get the bottle of Mechatas, and bring it over the oven, pass it over the oven. Machlokas in whether or not that Mechatas is Tameh or Tahor, Rabbi Kiva Metameh v'chachamim Metameh. Rabbi Kiva says it's Tameh. Now, you didn't actually put it in the oven. It didn't even stop over the oven. Still, because it went over the airspace of the oven, kluta kemisha huncha. Uvahapligi, Rabbi Kiva savre kemunach dami, v'rabbanan savre lav kemunach dami. Good. And so this is now Rabbah's understanding of Rabbi Kiva. This is Rabbah's understanding of Rabbi Elazar, is that Rabbi Elazar is following Rabbi Kiva. And that means to say that according to Rabbah, here's how we're looking at it. Again, we're sprinkling the Mechatas onto the woman who's the Nida. Even before the Mechatas water actually touches the Nida, it's entered her airspace. Now, again, I know. I'm also trying to wrap my head around this idea of what is considered her airspace. Okay, is it the area directly above her? I'm not 100% sure how to articulate this. But for our purposes right now, let's just assume that there is an airspace to a woman who's a Nida. Once the Mechatas enters her airspace, so now it's subject to Tumas Nida. Now that's subject to Tumas Nida, so here we go. So first it becomes Tameh, then it hits her. So now, clearly this is a sequential event. But only because it enters her airspace, it becomes Tameh, then it hits her. So Rabbi Lazar says, point proven, again, this is all according to Rabbah, point proven that when you have the tummy water first becoming tummy and then hitting a person, it's still effective, it still works. How do I know that? Because it works for a Nida, and the way to properly view it is that it first becomes tummy just hitting the airspace of the Nida, and then it actually hits the Nida. This is all Rabbah's understanding of Rebbe Lazar. Eis ve'abaye. But once again, the story's not over yet. Because Abaye, when he hears this explanation, Abaye says, this is a terrible explanation. It's incorrect. It's just an incorrect explanation. Moder Rabbi Kiva Ba'azah she'avir agabi klicheres. Tameh, agabe mishka v'moshe of Tameh shaya tahora, she'in lecha davar shemetameh lamala kilamata, elikaz aizman emez v'shar kol hama'ahilin, la'asuye evin emunugas. So Abaye says, first of all, let's learn another braisa together. Let's say I were to sprinkle the mechatas onto a person who needs a tahara from Tumas Mace. And let's say I were to sprinkle it onto the person and the mechatas was going over an object which was tame. And let's say it went over Kli Cheres, that was tame. Let's say even it went over Mishkav Moshav, the seat or the cushion of a Zav. A Zav, a Zavar, a Nida, Yoledes. So that seat or cushion is an Avatoma. So now the Mechatas is going over. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, if you're right, Kluta Kamisha Hun Chadamya. So what happens to that Mechatas? Shouldn't it become Tame? And meanwhile, in the Braisa, it says very clearly, it doesn't become Tame. Rabbi Akiva says it does not become Tame. The only thing that becomes Tame in airspace are mace and anything mace related. Saras, mace. But in other words, it does not become Tame. So clearly, you want to employ the idea of Klutim Kemishon Hun Chadamye within Rabbi Akiva. Clearly, it's not so. Ela Amar Abai Dekola Ame Lav Kemunach Tame. So Abai says that we don't apply the rule of Klutim Kemishon Chadamye. Fine. We got to go back now to the windowsill. I reached over the windowsill. I got the mechatas. I brought it over the oven that had a sheretz in it. And here we had a machlokas whether or not it's Tamir Tahor. What's going on over there? Hacha b'may kemiflagi, Rabbi Akiva Sav Gzera Shema Yanuach, Rabbanan Sav Alo Gazrinan. Over there, it's just a simple gzera, whether it's going to rest or it's not going to rest. Meaning, if I'm taking it over the oven, Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that the Chachamim made a gzera de Rabbanan to be metame that water for concern that if you do that, the next time you do that, you're going to allow it to rest in the oven. And so, as a gzera de Rabbanan, there's tuma regarding the mechatas, and the Chachamim are of the opinion of such gzera. But when it comes to you're throwing the water over the klisharis, so in other words, so you're launching it over. Once you launch it, there's no need to make such a gzera because the water now is being shot on its own. It has enough force where it's going to get propelled, and so therefore there's no reason to make such a gzera. And now that we've explained Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim regarding the windowsill, so back to our discussion. So now, and so now Abaye says, so what's the proper way to understand Rebbe Elazar and the Chachamim? So again, let's go back to now. I can sprinkle the mechatzas on a woman who's a nida. Even though she's a nida, that sprinkling is going to resolve her tumas mace. Rebbe Elazar says, what have I just proven? I've just proven that even though the mechatas is tameh, it could still affect the tahara. How do I know that? Because what Rebbe Elazar says is that even though the mechatas, when it comes into contact with the nida, contact, not airspace, not kluta kemishon chadamya, contact. When it makes contact with the woman who is a nida, we can view that even though it's concurrent, it becomes tameh and it affects the tahara on her, but we can also view that sequentially. And that's Rebbe Elazar's viewpoint. And the Chachamim say, no, that's concurrent. Don't confuse concurrent with sequential. Meaning that is where the Mechatas becomes Tame. And at the same time, it also is going to provide for a Tahara. So that is sequential. I'm sorry, that's concurrent. But don't then extrapolate from there and say, well, if it works concurrently, it can also work sequentially as well. So now that we're here, so in that one line and a half of Gemara that the Gemara said earlier, so now we get to go back to our original question. Our original question was the blood of the Dam Chatas that lands on a Beged that is Tameh. So as it's landing on the Beged, so two things are occurring. There's a Kibbutz requirement and the blood becomes Tameh. Do I look at that concurrently or do I look at that sequentially? And the Gemara says that the way that Abaye explained the machlokes between Rav Elazar and the Chachamim is going to then speak to the way to view the blood landing on the tamei garment, whether when something happens concurrently, do we also get to look at that sequentially as well? Okay. Admittedly, that piece of Gemara was really difficult. Okay. I strongly encourage go over it again. It's a difficult piece of Gemara. Now Rava over here dispenses with the entire explanation that was just provided. Rava says we don't really need to look at it that way. And so, but still, we need a way to explain the machlokes from Rav Elazar and the Chachamim regarding sprinkling the mechatos on the nida. Rav Elazar savra hazah tzrich hashir, umitzarfen lahazahos, v'rabbanan savra hazah tzrich hashir. And so over here, the way to view it is very simple. I mean, in other words, from Rava's standpoint. And that is that, and we discussed this topic before, when you sprinkle the mechatos on a person, is there a requisite amount that needs to be sprinkled? Machlokas. And the Gemara, and Rava says over here, this is exactly the machlokas. From Rav Elazar's standpoint, there is a requirement of how much needs to be sprinkled on. An entire head, when I say head, meaning an azov head of sprinkling needs to be sprinkled on the person. So over here, when you sprinkle the first little bit on, so you don't have the shear, you don't have the requisite amount. And yet, when it makes contact with her, the nida, that mechatos becomes tameh. And then we're going to sprinkle again to get the full shear on. So Rav Elazar says, so what just happened? It tameh, it's first tameh, and then we get the full amount, and it's mitarher. So Rav Elazar says, point proven. You could take tameh mechatos and use it to purify somebody. And umitzarfen. And the Chachamim say, no, there's no shear requirement. The moment any trace amount of Mechatos makes contact with her, that Tahara works. So in other words, so you can't prove from here that even though it becomes Tameh, it can purify her, because the first thing that happened is it purified her, and then it becomes Tameh. Or I could say it in our fancy terminology earlier. It happened concurrently, but don't prove from there sequential. Because according to the Chachamim, there's no shear requirement. Okay, let's just finish up to the Mishnah. I know we're behind. I know it's late, but let's just finish the Mishnah. Chatos psula tan rabbanan midam midam cher v'lo midam psula. According to the Tanakama, only eligible blood requires this kibbutz, has this kibbutz requirement, not an eligible blood. Rabbi Kiva Amar ha'isla shasakosha v'nifsala damatan kibbutz. Lo ha'isla shasakosha v'nifsala ein damatan kibbutz. And Rabbi Kiva says, if it had a moment of eligibility after, went into the cup after Kabbalah Saddam, so then there's a kibbutz requirement. If it didn't have a moment of eligibility, so then it does not require kibbutz. Rabbi Shimon Amar Echazeh V'Echazeh Ein Damatan Kibbutz. And Rabbi Shimon says, whether it did or did not have a moment of eligibility did not require kibbutz. Meaning, Rabbi Shimon is with the Chachamim. My time to Rabbi Shimon, Ksiv Osev, Ksiv Midama Chale, Hechad Aisal Shasa Kosher, Chada Kosher, and then we're just going to add a line in Gemara as per the directions of the margin, v'chad lo ha'isal ha'shasa kosher. Meaning there are two exclusions. The two exclusions are to tell me when it did, or even if it did not have a time of eligibility, it's going to be disqualified. Rabbi Kiva osa prala truma, and then Rabbi Kiva says, yes, sir, I agree there's a second exclusion, but that's just to tell me truma. Rabbi Shimon atame damer kachim kalamein tunim rika v'shtiva kol shekein truma. Now, Rabbi Shimon is consistent with an opinion we'll see later in this perek, and that is that kashrim kalim don't require, don't have this requirement of kashering, and certainly not kibbutz. V'kol shekein truma, if kashrim kalim don't have this requirement, truma also doesn't have this requirement, i.e., I don't need an exclusion. And since I don't need an exclusion for truma, so therefore the two exclusions are one to tell me where it had a shasta kosher, and one to tell me even when it did not have a shasta kosher. Okay. So where do we stand today in terms of the conclusion of today's daf? So a number of questions regarding the neck of a bird, whether that's viewed as a klisharis, whether it's not viewed as a klisharis. The Gemara left that question open-ended. The really difficult question of today's daf, well, the first question that we dealt with regarding blood of chatas is when it ricochets from one garment to another garment. When it ricochets to the second garment, do we say that it was disqualified once they hit the first garment? And so when ricocheting to the second garment, does it require kibbutz from the second garment? Levi says, if he asked me the question, I think for sure it does, but I subscribe to Rabbi Kiva, where as long as it had a shasa kosher, it would be fine. So Levi said, he doesn't say this, but I may not be the best person to ask that question to. I subscribe to Rabbi Kiva. And the big question of the day is, when the blood of chatas lands on a garment that's tameh, so is there a kibbutz requirement? So for Rabbi Kiva, the answer is unequivocally yes, because it has shasa kosher. What about according to the Chachamim? And basically, the Gemara then launched into a really conceptual debate of when that blood hits the tameh garment, do we say that it was a sequential event, or do we say that it was a concurrent event? If it's a sequential event where first it becomes tamei and then it's embedded into the garment, so then it does not require kibbutz. If we say it's a concurrent event, so that means to say that it went into the garment and it becomes tamei and that happened concurrently, and therefore there would be a kibbutz requirement. Because up until the point where it goes into the garment, it was eligible. And so it would require kibbutz. And to that question of when something makes contact and two events occur, so do we look at that sequentially, concurrently? So we launched into a lengthy discussion regarding the sprinkling of a woman who's a nida with the mechatas to resolve her tumas meis tuma. And do we view that as a sequential event or do we view it as a concurrent event? And that is a question of how I understand the machlokas between Rebbe Elazar and the Chachamim. And there were no less than three different ways to explain it. Rabba's explanation, Abaye's explanation, and Rava's explanation. Only based on Abaye's explanation do we get to test our theory of whether we look at it sequentially, whether we look at it concurrently. But according to explanations 1 and 3, according to Abaye and according to Rabba, according to Rabba and according to Rava, so we don't even get to test our theory of whether we look at it sequentially or concurrently.